Chapter 13. Before he turned again to lead the way, he gave Mr. Dombey a bow and a half smile of recognition, importing that he, the beetle, remembered to have had the pleasure of attending on him when he buried his wife, and hoped he had enjoyed himself since. The very wedding looked dismal as they passed in front of the altar. The bride was too old, and the bridegroom too young, and a superannuated beau with one eye, and an eyeglass stuck in its blank companion, was giving away the lady, while the friends were shivering. In the vestry the fire was smoking, and an overaged, and overworked, and underpaid attorney's clerk, making a search, apostrophe was running his forefinger down the parchment pages of an immense register, one of a long series of similar volumes, gorged with burials. Over the fireplace, was a ground plan of the vaults underneath the church, and Mr. Chick, skimming the literary portion of it aloud, by way of enlivening the company, read the reference to Mrs. Dombey's tomb in full, before he could stop himself. After another cold interval, a wheezy little pew opener afflicted with an asthma, appropriate to the churchyard, if not to the church, summoned them to the fawn, a rigid marble basin which seemed to have been playing a churchyard game at cup and ball with its matter-of-fact pedestal, and to have been just that moment caught on the top of it. Here they waited some little time, while the marriage party enrolled themselves, and meanwhile the wheezy little pew opener, partly in consequence of her infirmity, and partly that the marriage party might not forget her, went about the building coughing like a grampus. Presently the clerk, the only cheerful-looking object there, and he was an undertaker, came up with a jug of warm water, and said something, as he poured it into the font, about taking the chill off, which millions of gallons boiling hot could not have done for the occasion. Then the clergyman, an amiable and mild-looking young curate, but obviously afraid of the baby, appeared like the principal character in a ghost story, a tall figure all in white, apostrophe at sight of whom Paul rent the air with his cries, and never left off again till he was taken out black in the face. Even when that event had happened, to the great relief of everybody, he was heard under the portico, during the rest of the ceremony, now fainter, now louder, now hushed, now bursting forth again with an irrepressible sense of his wrongs. This so distracted the attention of the two ladies, that Mrs. Chick was constantly deploying into the center aisle, to send out messages by the pew opener, while Miss Tox kept her prayer book open at the gunpowder plot, and occasionally read responses from that service. During the whole of these proceedings, Mr. Dombey remained as impassive and gentlemanly as ever, and perhaps assisted in making it so cold that the young curate smoked at the mouth as he read. The only time that he unbent his visage in the least was when the clergyman, in delivering very unaffectedly and simply the closing exhortation relative to the future examination of the child by the sponsors, happened to rest his eye on Mr. Chick, and then Mr. Dombey might have been seen to express by a majestic look that he would like to catch him at it. It might have been well for Mr. Dombey if he had thought of his own dignity a little less, and had thought of the great origin and purpose of the ceremony in which he took so formal and so stiff a part a little more. His arrogance contrasted strangely with its history. When it was all over, he again gave his arm to Miss Tox, and conducted her to the vestry, where he informed the clergyman how much pleasure it would have given him to have solicited the honor of his company at dinner, but for the unfortunate state of his household affairs. The register signed, and the fees paid, and the pew opener, whose cough was very bad again, remembered, and the beadle gratified, and the sexton, who was accidentally on the doorsteps, looking with great interest at the weather, not forgotten, they got into the carriage again, and drove home in the same bleak fellowship. There they found Mr. Pitt turning up his nose at a cold collation, set forth in a cold pomp of glass and silver, and looking more like a dead dinner lying in state than a social refreshment. On their arrival Miss Tox produced a mug for her godson, and Mr. Chick a knife and fork and spoon in a case. Mr. Domini also produced a bracelet for Miss Tox, and, on the receipt of this token, Miss Tox was tenderly affected. Mr. John, apostrophe said Mr. Domini, will you take the bottom of the table, if you please? What have you got there, Mr. John? Apostrophe, I have got a cold fillet of veal here, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Chick, rubbing his numbed hands hard together. What have you got there, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, this, apostrophe returned Mr. Domini, is some cold preparation of calf's head, I think. I see cold fowls, ham, patty, salad, lobster. Miss Tox will do me the honor of taking some wine. Champagne to Miss Tox. Apostrophe, there was a toothache in everything. The wine was so bitter cold that it forced a little scream from Miss Tox, which she had great difficulty in turning into a ham. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the veal had come from such an airy pantry that the first taste of it had struck a sensation, as of cold lead to Mr. Chick's extremities. Mr. Domini alone remained unmoved. He might have been hung up for sale at a Russian fair as a specimen of a frozen gentleman. The prevailing influence was too much even for his sister. She made no effort at flattery or small talk, and directed all her efforts to looking as warm as she could. Well, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Chick, making a desperate plunge, after a long silence, and filling a glass of sherry, I shall drink this, if you'll allow me, sir, to little Paul. Apostrophe, bless him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, murmured Miss Tox, taking a sip of wine. Dear little Domini. Apostrophe, apostrophe, murmured Mrs. Chick. Mr. John, apostrophe said Mr. Domini, with severe gravity, my son would feel and express himself obliged to you, I have no doubt, if he could appreciate the favor you have done him. He will prove, in time to come, I trust, equal to any responsibility, that the obliging disposition of his relations and friends, in private, or the onerous nature of our position, in public, may impose upon him. Apostrophe, the tone in which this was said admitting of nothing more, Mr. Chick relapsed into low spirits and silence. Not so Miss Tox, who, having listened to Mr. Domini with even a more emphatic attention than usual, and with a more expressive tendency of her head to one side, now leant across the table, and said to Mrs. Chick softly, Louia, apostrophe, apostrophe, my dear, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick. Onerous nature of our position in public may I have forgotten the exact term. Apostrophe, expose him to, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick. Pardon me, my dear, apostrophe returned Miss Tox, I think not. It was more rounded and flowing. Obliging disposition of relations and friends in private, or onerous nature of position in public may impose upon him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, impose upon him, to be sure, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick. Miss Tox struck her delicate hands together lightly, in triumph, and added, casting up her eyes, eloquence indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Domini, in the meanwhile, had issued orders for the attendance of Richards, who now entered curtsying, but without the baby, Paul being asleep after the fatigues of the morning. Mr. Domini, having delivered a glass of wine to his vassal, addressed her in the following words. Miss Tox previously settling her head on one side, and making other little arrangements for engraving them on her heart. During the 6 months or so, Richards, which have seen you an inmate of this house, you have done your duty. Desiring to connect some little service to you with this occasion, I considered how I could best effect that object, and I also advised with my sister, Mrs. Apostrophe Chick, apostrophe interposed the gentleman of that name. Oh, hush if you please. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Miss Tox. I was about to say to you, Richards, apostrophe resumed Mr. Domini, with an appalling glance at Mr. John, that I was further assisted in my decision, by the recollection of a conversation I held with your husband in this room, on the occasion of your being hired, when he disclosed to me the melancholy fact that your family, himself at the head, were sunk and steeped in ignorance. Richards quailed under the magnificence of the reproof, I am far from being friendly, apostrophe pursued Mr. Dombey, to what is called by persons of leveling sentiments, general education. But it is necessary that the inferior classes should continue to be taught to know their position, and to conduct themselves properly. So far I approve of schools. Having the power of nominating a child on the foundation of an ancient establishment, called from a worshipful company, the Charitable Grinders, where not only is a wholesome education bestowed upon the scholars, but where a dress and badge is likewise provided for them, I have first communicating, through Mrs. Chick, with your family, nominated your eldest son to an existing vacancy, and he has this day, I am informed, assumed the habit. The number of her son, I believe, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, turning to his sister and speaking of the child, as if he were a hackney coach, is 147. Louia, you can tell her. Apostrophe, 147, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick the dress, Richards, is a nice, warm, blue beige tailed coat and cap, turned up with orange colored binding, red worsted stockings, and very strong leather small clothes. One might wear the articles oneself, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick, with enthusiasm, and be grateful. Apostrophe, there, Richards. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Miss Tox. Now, indeed, you may be proud. The Charitable Grinders. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am sure I am very much obliged, sir, apostrophe returned Richards faintly, and take it very kind, that you should remember my little ones. Apostrophe at the same time a vision of Tyler as a charitable grinder, with his very small legs encased in the serviceable clothing described by Mrs. Chick, swam before Richard's eyes, and made them water. I am very glad to see you have so much feeling, Richards, apostrophe said Miss Tox. It makes one almost hope, it really does, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick, who prided herself on taking trustful views of human nature, that there may yet be some faint spark of gratitude and right feeling in the world. Apostrophe, Richards deferred to these compliments, by curtsying and murmuring her thanks, but finding it quite impossible to recover her spirits from the disorder into which they had been thrown by the image of her son in his precocious nether garments, she gradually approached the door, and was heartily relieved to escape by it. Such temporary indications of a partial thaw that had appeared with her, vanished with her, and the frost set in again, as cold and hard as ever. Mr. Chick was twice heard to hum a tune at the bottom of the table, but on both occasions it was a fragment of the Dead March in Saul. The party seemed to get colder and colder, and to be gradually resolving itself into a congealed and solid state, like the collation round which it was assembled. At length Mrs. Chick looked at Miss Tox, and Miss Tox returned the look, and they both rose, and said it was really time to go. Mr. Dombey receiving this announcement with perfect equanimity, they took leave of that gentleman, and presently departed under the protection of Mr. Chick, who, when they had turned their backs upon the house, and left its master in his usual solitary state, put his hands in his pockets, threw himself back in the carriage, and whistled with a hey-ho Chevy, apostrophe apostrophe all through, conveying into his face as he did so, an expression of such gloomy and terrible defiance, that Mrs. Chick dared not protest, or in any way molest him. Richards, though she had little Paul on her lap, could not forget her own firstborn. She felt it was ungrateful, but the influence of the day fell even on the Charitable Grinders, and she could hardly help regarding his pewter badge, number 147, as, somehow, a part of its formality and sternness. She spoke to, in the nursery, of his blessed legs, apostrophe and was again troubled by his specter in uniform. I don't know what I wouldn't give, apostrophe said Polly, to see the poor little dear, before he gets used to 'em. Apostrophe, why then, I tell you what, Mrs. Richards, apostrophe retorted Nipper, who had been admitted to her confidence, see him and make your mind easy. Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey wouldn't like it. Apostrophe, said Polly. Oh, wouldn't he, Mrs. Richards? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Nipper. He'd like it very much, I think, when he was asked. Apostrophe, you wouldn't ask him, I suppose, at all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Polly. No, Mrs. Richards. Quite contrary, apostrophe, returned Susan, and them two inspectors, Tox and Chick, not intending to be on duty tomorrow, as I heard them say, me and Mitt Floy will go along with you tomorrow morning, and welcome, Mrs. Richards, if you like, for we may as well walk there, as up and down a street, and better too. Apostrophe, Polly rejected the idea pretty stoutly at first. But by little and little she began to entertain it, as she entertained more and more distinctly the forbidden pictures of her children, and her own home. At length, arguing that there could be no great harm in calling for a moment at the door, she yielded to the Nipper proposition. The matter being settled thus, little Paul began to cry most piteously, as if he had a foreboding that no good would come of it. What's the matter with the child? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Susan. He's cold, I think, apostrophe, said Polly, walking with him to and fro, and hushing him. It was a bleak autumnal afternoon indeed, and as she walked, and hushed, and, glancing through the dreary windows, pressed the little fellow closer to her breast, the withered leaves came showering down. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.